Hi, everybody. I'm Maury Povich. On my podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, I'm going to sit down with the icons, the stars, and the faces at the very center of today's big cultural moments. With everyone from comedians Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, Leanne Morgan, to newsmakers Don Lemon, Joy Reid, Aaron Parnas, and so many more. So join me for new episodes every week, because nothing is off limits. Great conversations. They're always on par. Follow and listen to On Par with Maury Povich wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. Explore the mind of MLB All-Star, Silver Slugger, and Gold Glove winner, Brett Boone, as he sits down with his friends from the world of professional sports. Now up to bat, Brett Boone.
All right. I want your, we'll start off, we're going to go Yankees-Mets. We're going to start with the Mets first. Mm-hmm. They're currently, Atlanta's a lot better than I thought they were. Playing really well right now.
Maybe
best record in baseball.
Philly's playing well too. Philly's good.
Top Philly since they, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and say Thompson, oh, he was the reason.
I heard
a lot of great things about Thompson. Sometimes just a shakeup wakes up players and go, listen, we're better than this. We need to start playing better. You know, Don Mattingly, respected across all baseball lines, obviously.
Yes.
But they've been playing better since Mattingly took over. I put little to anything into who the manager is. Manager is prepare you to compete every night. And really, at the end of the day, players win games and players lose games. Okay, anyway, Mets, 21-26, better as of late. I think 7 out of their last 10. You know, Soto went on IL for a while. They had a rough run. Everybody was getting fired at the time. I love Mendoza, and I'm thinking, uh-oh, if they keep going this way, is that going to happen too? They've turned it around. Give me long-term. What's in it for the Mets? Is it a lost season? What do you see there?
I mean, it was lost. And, you know, what they've done, the way they've found a way to kind of regenerate here, you know, based on the additional playoff format, you know, I mean, at least you can open up the possibility of hanging around, you know, and justifying, like, not selling off some of these pieces. I mean, think about this. If it would have kept going the way it was when Soto was on the 15-day IL with the calf, and now Lindor, who's going to be out at least another month. Now Clay Holmes is going to miss multiple months with that leg fracture, the fibra, the tip off the bat of Spencer Jones at 105 miles an hour. I just don't think the Mets have the horses. Like, I'm not a huge Vientos guy. He's too streaky. I do like Benj. I do like Ewing. I like what they brought in terms of juice and some of that youthful energy. I love McClain. You know, Peralta's good, but he's not a schoolboy. He just doesn't go deep in games. Not a schemes. He's not that guy. So right. I think the Mets right now can still go one of two ways. I still think that they can, you know, if they can win, if they can keep playing pretty well, and they're playing well right now, they can work themselves into the part of the conversation where maybe they go out and they acquire somebody to bolster a little run when Lindor's back, et cetera. And maybe they could sneak and be a playoff team, or, and this is also an equal possibility, this is a mirage. The Yankees aren't playing well right now, so I can't take much away from the Yankees series. They're playing the Nationals now, whatever. They swept the Tigers. Tigers stink without school bullet. Even with them, they're not that great. So, I mean, if you held me down, you said, all right, hey, listen, stop hemming and hawing. What's going to happen? Mets are not a playoff team. I don't think they're good enough. I don't think they'll sustain this long enough. But I do think they'll get to a point where Mendoza will at least finish the year, and then there's going to be some serious reevaluations, whether it's Stearns and Mendoza or one of them. But I don't think the Mets are a playoff team despite how they've looked the last couple of weeks. They're playing better, but I don't think they're that good.
I agree. And the bullpen, it's actually, for the most part, been well. Williams and Weaver had their bumps in the road. Weaver's been really good this month. I think Williams has been really good this month, too.
He has.
They're a solid bullpen. I think the Holmes going down is huge, because Peralta, formidable. McClain, I saw him a year ago in September. We went and played the Mets. I said, this kid's going to be good. He's the real deal.
Yes, he
so
is.
with that Holmes, Peralta, McClain, I was banking big on Senga this year. I heard he had a good spring. I've seen him in the past.
Yeah.
And it's never coming to fruition. The fact that he hasn't been a factor, yeah, I'm with you. I don't see him, especially in that division, because the Phillies are a more talented team, I think.
So do I.
Yeah. Top to bottom pitching. So, and Atlanta's the class of the division. So I think it's going to be really tough to make a run. And
Brett, by the way, think about this, Brett. Brett, think about it. The NL Central, I know you know this, is a lot better than anybody thought. And then you obviously the Dodgers, the Padres, like, you know, even if the Mets continue to play pretty well, like they're one more, because they played so poorly to start, they're one more, you know, bad 2-week stretch away from probably being shut out, even though there's a lot of baseball to go, because the NL is just a lot better than the AL. It's just a lot better.
There's four teams in the AL over 500. Four teams, and two of them are the Yankees and Tampa Bay.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
It's really embarrassing. And it's just kind of circumstantial too. It's cyclical. I mean, in 2 years it might be the other way, whatever. But I mean, the A's lead the West. They're under 500. The A's lead the West and have a negative run differential. It's not a week into the season. It's almost Memorial Day. It's crazy.
And the scary thing is, playing the A's a year ago, I thought, yeah, we roll in, we sweep them.
Yeah.
The A's offense. These guys are real.
I'm now, with you.
Playing in that stadium in Sacramento, It's like it shouldn't even be a sanctioned big league venue. It's just different. It's almost a Colorado we feel back in the day. Everything flies out. It's kind of Mickey Mouse to me.
Yep.
And those pitchers don't like pitching there. Those hitters obviously like hitter, but those hitters are legit. That catcher, that first baseman. I love the shortstop, what he brings, the fire. I think he's on the IL right now. Kurtz is going to be, it wouldn't surprise me if he's Jason Giambi in a couple of years, that level of player. I just really like him. I really like their offense. I like them going forward. I don't think they pitch enough. They got a couple guys. Ginn just went, he had a no hitter last night when they ended up losing the game. He's got really good stuff. There's a couple guys on that staff I like. Severino already talking about he doesn't like pitching at home. Well, if your ace is saying, I don't like pitching at home, that doesn't set the tone. But it's an interesting division. I thought Seattle just runs away with it from what I saw a year ago. They're scuffling. So interesting. It's a weird start to the season. All right, let's switch it over to Yankees. Tell me what you got. They were hot as a firecracker. Now all of a sudden they're reversed. They won three out of their last seven. Last 10.
They got three good hitters. I mean, that's it. I mean, you know, there's days I'm like, hit Ben Rice first. There's days I'm like, put Jazz, see what he can do first. There's days Goldschmidt hits first and does well against lefties. Here's what I think is going to happen. Number one, I do think, provided Fried's okay, and I do think that they avoided disaster with him, certainly in terms of Tommy John, but until he's back, he's still a little worried. Cole's coming back. You think McClain's good. Schlittler's better, and I know that you know that. Cam Schlittler is ridiculous, dude. So you've got the making. Will Warren is really good, and Weathers has swing and miss stuff and is a nasty lefty. One of those dudes, either Weathers or Warren's going to the bullpen, and at that point, Rodon, it really becomes like your fourth or your fifth starter. Because if you go like optimally, now it might not happen, in a perfect optimal situation, you've got Fried, Schlittler, Cole, Rodon four. Now, Rodon is not like the other three, but he's one of the best fours in baseball. And he could even slot down to the five. So the Yankee staff starting is going to be phenomenal. And then once Cole comes back and Fried comes back, one of those guys moves to the bullpen, which will make the bullpen better. This I know you know about LeGrande, who throws 102 miles. He's coming up soon. I think that the Yankees, number one, and I thought maybe it would have been Bryce if the Phillies kept playing poorly. You got to find a way to get Mike Trout out of that horrendous 17-31 situation, have the Angels eat half the money, get him at a pennant race, a righty stick who still has thump, and you go with, you know, whether it's, you know, Rice one, Judge two, Belly three, Trout four, so, and then maybe Stanton if he's healthy, some variation of that. But I don't like the lineup. Now, there is an internal solution here. Cabby's coming back. Volpe is what he is, and I love the kid, and I'm happy he's playing better. He's got a weak arm, and he strikes out too much, so he is far from perfect and far from a given. But if Lombard, who I know you know about, who is the real deal, yeah, he could play defense in the majors now at second, short, third.
Right.
Now, you're okay, all right, can you put Cabby at third? Can you put Lombard at short, or can you keep Volpe at short and put Lombard at third and Cabby, there are some variations that opens up their lineup with speed and some more contact as well to set things up for the big bangers. But this Yankee, to think about, this is why I always get on Cashman more than your brother by a wide margin. I don't know what anybody expect. Like, there is no manipulation right now. Care what order you put them in, that's going to be a lineup that looks like a World Series team. I don't care who, I don't care if you played 20 years in the bigs and you tell me you don't know anything, you didn't play. This is a Yankees offense that's built to win the World Series. It's not even close. They don't make enough contact. They got five automatic outs too early, too often right now. And, you know, what's happening now, Brett, is tick, tick, tick. Like, the Judge is still great, but how many more prime years do you have? Is there a full baseball season next year? I don't know. But they owe it to Judge. They owe it to Cole. And they owe it to your brother, quite frankly, and Yankee fans, to go out there and make a massive move. I don't mean, you know, a little middle infielder that's going to play twice a league like Lozario, or who I like. I mean a thumper. Pick up the money, get somebody who can still play, and bring him in and go and get back to the World Series.
Well, here's what I think about, and I'm watching the Padres here on this coast, who last in the league in hitting.
I know. It's crazy. When
they beat the Dodgers last night 1-0. King's a stud. I've always liked King.
Me too.
But Pivetta goes down. Their number one starter goes down at the beginning of the season. Tatis has got zero homers. Manny Machado's hitting 170. And they're one of the best records in baseball. It makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's called, you know, something's going on special there where they have a chemistry and something's just working.
Yeah.
When you talk about bringing up the Lombard, yeah, I understand he's going to be a great player. I think the days of, you know, Jeter, for me, the best I've ever seen as far as acclimating to the big leagues at a young age and just being a stud from day one. And I didn't think so, was Chipper Jones. I remember when Chipper Jones came to the big leagues and that Braves team was stacked.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden I come to the yard, I'm playing the Braves. I'm in the Reds at the time. And I see this Chipper Jones kid hitting third. I said, how the hell is Chipper Jones, who we've never heard of, hitting third in this lineup? Well, you found out as time went on. I've never seen somebody that poised coming to the big leagues on a big time team, being put in the middle of a lineup and handling it like a 10-year veteran. So I don't think that's, when you bring up a Lombard, yeah, that's great to think what he's going to do in the future, but you're in a pennant race. I don't know if that necessarily equals success right away. Caballero's done a really nice job. His whole life, he's been a platoon player.
Yeah.
Volpe, you know, in the short little, in the short sample you've got since he's been back from AAA, he's done a lot better job. He's walked seven times. I don't think he walked seven times per month a year ago, but he did in the first two or three games. Who knows? Does he turn the corner? I don't know. I can't sit here and say he is gonna or he isn't. But I look at that team, and I think the way baseball's set up now, and correct me if you have a different of opinion, it's not like we were talking about at the opening of the show. It's not about the 162 anymore, and we've got to win. The more I think about it as an outsider, as a fan that just watches, it's about getting a seat at the table now. I think the Dodgers have that, you know, a year ago, are the Dodgers going to win 117 games and break the record? They didn't set out to do that. They set out to have a seat at the table. They're deeper than every other franchise in the game. Yep. They won their second World Series in a row. I think that's what it's about now. And I look at, and obviously, I've never been a Yankee fan in my life. Now, Aaron takes over. I kind of got to pull for Aaron. That's part of it. I would never pull for the Yankees in my life. But now, of course, I've got a little bit of an interest because I want a brother to do well. I want to see Aaron win a World Series. So I'm a little biased, but I look at it and I thought early when they were hot and nobody else in the American League was hot, I thought this is great because you're going to hit you're going to have your ebb and flows. You're going to have your downtime and he's building up enough wins to be able to weather the storm.
Correct.
I think teams like that, when you kind of get to midseason, you kind of start the teams that really have separated themselves from everybody else in the win loss. They kind of know they're going to the postseason without an absolute epic fail. So you can set your team up for that trading deadline and really go for it. I think the Yankees will. So if anything, you know, and we can criticize I have my fair criticisms of them too, but I just think they're in a position to weather the storm better than 80% of the teams out there right now. So they'll be in a position where they know what they need at the trade deadline. You're getting Cole back. That's going to be huge. I'm hearing good things from his last start down there.
So 99. He hit 99, by the way, 99.
Right. And there's a lot of positives about how bad they've been lately. Three out of their last 10, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But they're 29-19. And there's a lot of teams out there like the Mets right now. Okay, we're playing good, but we dug a hole. So we're going to be fighting all year, and we're going to get to the trade deadline and not be clear cut. Oh, even if they play great, it's going to be, oh, we might make the playoffs. We might not. You know, I was in Texas a year ago at the deadline. I'm thinking, oh, I hope they made it. They made a splash. They got a couple pitchers on the bullpen side that helped us.
Yeah.
Got one starter. But then down the stretch, you know, we lost Seager and we lost Simeon and Wyatt Langford went down and Evan Carter went down and we were kind of on our last leg, one game out with 10 to play. And the young kids that came up from AAA, I can't expect them to just carry us over the finish line and not make an excuse. But we were in that. Should we go for it? Should we not go for it right at the time? The guys that really have it clear cut and, oh, we're going for it, or no, we're definitely not going for it, I think it's kind of an easier decision. And I think that's the advantage the teams like the Yankees, Tampa Bay right now has, Padres, the Dodgers. They know pretty much unless there's an epic collapse, they're going in one direction.
Yes. Okay. So I almost look at the baseball. See, I think this lines up with what you're saying. So I pretty much agree. I process, and I think teams have started to do this as well. The first 50 games, let's see what we got. Let's see the team we built in the offseason. Let's run it out there. 50 games. All right, just about a third of the season. What do we have? And then the next 50, all right, now based on what we saw in the first 50, let's determine what we have to go and get if you're serious about winning. And then for the final 50 or 60, let's now have this new group and let's now go get what we have to get. And the Yankees absolutely had that luxury. There's no doubt because the American League was weak and they've got a great staff and Judge is the man and Rice is really good and all that. And they win a lot. I'm not worried about the Yankees making the playoffs here at all. Well, I don't care if they lose five in a row, and they're playing some. They got Tampa. They got Toronto again tonight. Then Tampa. I know they won last night, obviously, when Jazz hit the home run off the pole, whatever. Could have easily lost that if Bednar would have tripped over himself. And Lord knows he tried to do it again, but he got out of it. Yankees win. Not worried about the playoffs. My biggest issue with the Yankees is that the team that they run out way too much, one exception, Soto, 24, there's just too many empty at-bats. And it's nice to have Judge bang 55 and Belly be a terrific all-around player who can play anywhere in the outfield or first base. And Ben Rice is a stud, hits everything hard, numbers back that up. When you're trotting out a McMahon, and I mean almost in succession at some point, like Volpe, Wells, McMahon, you know, Grisham should not be a leadoff hitter. He's hitting 160, whatever. You know, like you got four or five guys that if you're an average pitcher, you can kind of work around and navigate. And I don't need three-run home runs. Like some Yankee fans need to just bludgeon people and home run 9-2, Yankee flex, you know, Yankee power. I just need a team that is going to do enough because the starting pitching is going to do their job. But if you don't move a guy over, if you strike out 10, 11, 12 times in a game, which they do all the time, especially in the postseason, you even go back to the World Series where the year before they got Soto. So I'm sorry, it's 24 with Soto the year before when they beat the Guardians. They're like team OPS was like 570 and they set records for strikeouts. Like they just won because the Guardians didn't have enough good players. Like, you know, so I know that it would be tricky to thrust Lombard in there and maybe you don't trust Cabbie every day. Understood. But at least I know Lombard could run. He's going to have a much more quality at bat than some of these other guys who are just at the bottom of the order. Put the bat on the ball. And if you do that, his wheels will take over. Caballero's going to steal 40 bags, put his eyes shut. If Volpe doesn't hit 203, he's going to steal 40 bags because he's basically done it before. And now you've got jackrabbits on the bases and a couple of guys who can bang. And now with that pitching, now you could win a World Series. But here's what I honestly think about the Yankees. Unless they do something fantastic at the deadline, they'll win 93, 94 games, maybe 95 if they wake up quick. And maybe last night's the start of it. They'll absolutely be a playoff team, probably win the division, but if not, fall very close to Tampa, be a high wild card, win a round or two and get bounced. This team is not winning a World Series. They're just not. They're not good enough. They're not productive enough and they're not consistent enough. So It's a different measurement against the Mets. It's a different measurement against the other teams in the AL. But my ultimate measurement is a World Series, you know, and Judge is running out of time, man. So that's where I am on the Yankees. I just don't, their lineup, I can't stand their lineup. I mean, McMahon is a disaster. Wells stinks. These guys aren't getting
aren't you a Chisholm fan?
No, not at all.
I'm not. I've seen your takes.
Okay.
He's got to be, Chisholm's got to be one of those guys that steps up other than the three you talk about. For me, on the offensive side.
Yeah.
Chisholm's, he's got to be better than he is.
He's got to be one of the four guys that you bank on pretty much every night. I agree with that. See, but even the problem with Jazz Chisholm, and I tell your brother this, and he's just like, I know he gets it, but he obviously likes him more than I do. He's just not emotionally reliable. Like, I'm never worried about Judge being locked in, hitting the cut, you know, making the right read on the bases. Even though Ben Rice isn't fast, I'm not worried about him not being locked into a specific situation. And same with Belly, who is a really just a pure baseball player. Jazz Chisholm, the moment that he said that he's going to go 50-50 this year is the moment I said he's going to hit 209. Because for a guy who doesn't have that natural, now he's got.
I heard that.
Come on,
we got enough on us. Why add to?
Come on, man. Yeah. It's a contract year. You're not McGuire or Judge or one of these natural like Mickey Tettleton who just hit bombs back in the day and hit 202. You know, Rob Deere. Like, you know, you've got juice and you've got that skinny juice and that power. But every swing, he's swinging like Babe Ruth, which means situational aspect goes out the window because he's not going to get the 50, not going to get the 40, but he's chasing this. He's chasing a contract. He's chasing numbers. His mechanics are a disaster. He's blowing bubbles in the World Series when the ball's bouncing around the infield. He's a mess on the bases. I can't stand it. I told your brother, I said, if you guys sign him, you are out of your minds. You are nuts. If you get, and I know they're not going to, and I didn't get that from your brother. I know that they're not giving him an extension. There is no chance that they believe in him the way that some Yankee fans want them to, or the way some Yankee fans still foolishly do. I've seen all I need to see. I don't care about talent. You're either buttoned up or you're not. And we know what he is.
Yeah. The one thing I will say that's that I was an eye opener to me, you know, because I think, you know, I get a call last year and I'm going back and I'm going to be the hitting coach for the Texas Rangers. And I went in and for years and years, when Aaron would call me, and Aaron and I talk probably once a week, once every 2 weeks, sometimes depending on how things are going. And, you know, he'd call me and ask me what I think about certain things. And I'd say, I'd always be that big brother and go, listen, Aaron, you got to quit worrying about this. I can tell when he's on edge. You got to quit worrying about this. There's only so much you can do. Quit getting to the ballpark at noon, putting together 18 different freaking lineups. You know, it doesn't matter. You were a player. You know what that's like. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter what the manager does. We never sit around after the game going, well, Aaron really blew it for us tonight. No, when we don't win, we know why we didn't win. We didn't execute. It's not the manager did anything wrong. That being said, so that's my take as an outsider. Now, fast forward. I'm back in uni. I'm on the field. I talked to Aaron about, Aaron was calling me every night. How's it going? Da, 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 da. And after 2 weeks, I said, Aaron, I'll tell you what. All that brotherly advice. Now I know what you're going through because I was changed. I was different. I was emotionally invested. Yeah. I love these kids. I had 13 kids that were my hitters and people would say something about him. I'd say, hey, don't you say that about him.
Yeah,
he's different. He's not like that, you know, from what you see on the outside, where I'm a critic from the outside. What I see on TV, how I see you behave, I form an opinion. I don't always say it, but I have an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went in that capacity,
yeah,
these hitters are mine and I'm responsible for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how I defended them and go, hey, anybody that say anything, I said, no, he's better than you think. He's going to be fine. So now when Aaron has that take into you and go, how can you not see that, Aaron Boone? I know what he's feeling because you do. You get an emotional attachment. It's not that you're delirious. It's not that you're not a realist when the smoke clears. I'll defend you to the end. And if I have to have a tough conversation and it's private, I'm going to say, man, you know, I want so bad for player X to do this and that. I just don't know if he's capable. But if he does do it, it's going to make us win and make us go to the postseason.
Yeah.
So I have to have a little bit, sometimes blind
faith.
I got to have blind faith sometimes. And just go, I know it doesn't look good. I'm with you in the cage every day. It doesn't look good for you. But I've got to have something to hitch my wagon to if we're going to go to play past September. Mm-hmm. Or into September, you know?
I know.
It's like, so you get a little, as much as you're not skewed, because in a sober moment, I can be pretty clear with you on what I think. And then hopefully I'm wrong. But in the moment, you're going to believe and you're going to stay. You're going to hit your wagon to your guys because you're in this fight together. So last year was a learning experience for me going, it is different when you're there. And I wasn't the manager, but I had to report to my manager and I was in charge of my hitters. And now when the talk shows come on and say, Brett Boone stinks as a hitting coach, I've got, hey, wait a minute. And then when things are going good, I'm the greatest hitting coach of all times. And I'm thinking, neither are true. Neither are true. Players play.
Yeah.
And background players, which is us, staff. Maybe if we can help you this much, this much, we did our job.
Yeah.
But by no means am I going to take a dysfunctional offense and turn it into the great offense of all time. There's no pitching coach on earth that's going to take a mediocre staff and make them Cy Young Award winner. It's
impossible.
I laugh online when he's got to be fired. He's got to be fired. And I just laugh and go, do you realize it has nothing to do with him? It has nothing to do with him on why the team is playing the way they're playing. But I do understand in this game, the players are the players and they don't get fired. And sometimes they can't get fired because of their contract situation. So somebody's always got to bite the bullet for it.
I mean, really, outside of Aaron Judge, you know, his most productive right-handed hitter misses 50 to 60 games every single year. And I love Stanton. But it's what it is. I mean,
it's a different era. And we talked about this. OPS has ruined the game.
Yeah, we were talking about that on the phone the other day. Yep. Even with the kid's stats, like on Game Changer, OPS pops up right away. I know, you know, and to me, like the minimization of batting average, I think it's laughable. Like, you know, and this ties into the OPS conversation, like, you know, so-and-so is hitting 179, but he's got an OPS of 790. He's doing a decent job. Okay. All right, I get it. He's got a couple of home runs, a couple of doubles, a couple of walks, gets the OPS up to a decent neighborhood. But to me, if you're now, I mean, nobody's going to hit 160 on the year, geez. But like, if you're a 203, a 209, a 219 hitter, to me, you are just, there is a lesser OPS aside.
You're a bad hitter.
There is just a greater chance that when I need you to have a good at bat in a high leverage situation, whether it's October or late September against a closer to get to the World Series or get to the Championship Series, whatever it might be, you're just not going to be as equipped to do it as the guys that hit 280, 290, put the ball on, you know, put the bat on the ball, hit it the other way, hit it where it's pitched, get in a hitter's count by not expanding the zone early, which limits what the pitcher can throw. Yeah, I mean, these guys go up there, you know, a slider on the black that's 6 inches off the plate. They're waving at it. I'm like, dude, if you spit, I know it's easier said than done. I couldn't do it as a player. I know that. But if you spit on that thing and now instead of 0-1 and he can do whatever he wants, well, now it's 1-0. And now guess what? He's got to come a little bit more into you. And then if he does the same thing, now he's got to really come into you. And then he just passes the baton if he doesn't come into you to somebody else. So it's just it's the absence of nobody's embarrassed anymore. Like, when I would strike out, whether it was high school or college, I felt shame. Like I would also probably smash the bat rack and fire. Like I was, you know, I would get pissed, you know, which is probably not the best thing, but I was like O'Neal a little bit in that regard. But that's how embarrassed I was and how frustrated I was. These guys strike out, take the gloves off, take the elbow guard off, take the shin guard wrap off, flip the helmet. Hey, does anybody care that they just struck out on three pitches and literally missed every pitch by this much? Does anybody care? They don't care.
And the umpires are better than they've ever been, and the zone is smaller than it's ever been. The umpires are good. They're flat out good. I think in this ABS, you're finding out how good they really are. In my day, it's like 6 inches off the play. Strike what?
I know.
And there's nothing. There was no, we didn't have a foolproof white box to back up our argument. It was all, that was a good pitch. That wasn't a good pitch. The thing you talk about, and man, we've been going, this has all been great. The thing you talked about is the high leverage situation for a hitter. What do high leverage pitchers, to your OPS comment about you're hitting 201, you know, your on base percentage is OPS is X. Mm-hmm. What do high leverage pitchers not do?
They don't give in.
They don't walk you.
Well, yeah, but that's what it is.
So if you're hitting 203,
yeah,
I don't care if you're a good walker.
Yeah.
If you ain't going to get walked by the good guys.
I
so I need a guy hitting. I want the guy with the three in front of his average coming up. Huh? And the guy that doesn't walk anyone is pitching. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes
203 with it. 203 with an elite closer in the game equals you are automatically 99 out of 100 times. You are out. You are out.
You
don't
nailed
even
it.
Go up there.
You nailed
don't
it.
Even go up there.
Oh, man, you nailed it. That's a good point. I got a question for you. You mentioned the ABS, and I'm fascinated to hear your answer. So to me, no order. I'm going to go from like, I was born in the 70s, but I'll go like 1960 on. To me, like some of the greatest right-handed pitchers in ever for me, Gibson, Seaver, Pedro, Maddox, Clemens. I'm sure I'm missing one or two others, right? Do you think that Greg Maddox would have been the same guy with the ABS?
Well, I think if Greg Maddox came up in this era, absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
You do.
If Greg Maddox born in 1995.
Yep.
Absolutely. Because people, the misnomer about Maddox that everybody talks, well, he threw 89. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Maddox had 95 anytime he wanted it. He just didn't throw it. Maddox was all about pinpoint control. And by the way, you mentioned Pedro. Unbelievable pitcher. God. Randy Johnson, unbelievable. There's a lot of guys. Schilling,
yeah, no, I was just going pitcher. Lefties. Otherwise, I would have said Randy Johnson, too, for sure.
Let me tell you this. If I got to pick one, body of work, Greg Maddox is the greatest pitcher I've ever seen.
Yeah, I get
day
it.
Day in and day out, never a bad day. He is robust. He's like, it's like I was pitching against, hitting against a machine.
Mm-hmm.
Like his days where he was off, he was missing by an inch.
A normal
person, when they miss by a foot. Maddox would, it was like I was facing Iron Mike and I'm going, but he had that movement. And the thing about Maddox is everybody likes to say he didn't throw hard. He threw as hard as he wanted to throw. Mm. But he sat in his heyday, he sat 92, 93, but it was the heaviness of his ball. Mm-hmm. There are certain guys' balls in the game. Kevin Brown.
Yes. Yes.
Had a heavy sinker. I couldn't lift that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mariano Rivera for a cutter baller. Now, cutter balls, usually they're light. It's just getting it off the barrel because it cuts. Mm-hmm. Mariano's cutter was heavy.
Interesting.
When I'd square it up, it felt like I was hitting a weighted ball.
Did it really?
Bowling ball. Oh. Yeah. Different than everybody else's cutter I ever faced.
Yeah.
And then there was Maddox's sinker.
Yeah.
Maddox's sinker. It's like there's certain guys I got to decide what I'm doing today. If I'm facing your typical, you know, fastball, slider, sinker, change. Yeah. I'm my normal swing. You hang one, you throw me a sinker out over the plate. I'm going to take you deep. There were certain guys I had to go into the game and just give something up. Okay. It's Kevin Brown today. Unless he hangs me a curveball, I ain't taking him deep. I'm not taking that sinker deep. My swing is not conducive to taking that deep. Maddox, same thing. Unless he hangs me a breaking ball, I'm not taking him deep. Matter of fact, if I get a good sinker to hit, and I might get one in a bat, it's tough for me to penetrate a gap because that ball is so heavy coming off my bat.
Wow.
So what I'm saying is, it's tough for me to hit a double.
Yeah. I get you. I follow you. Yeah.
Mariano Rivera. And I don't have many regular season at bats off him, but I had some postseason and some success off him. I got 3 or 4 hits and probably 6 or 7 at bats.
That's pretty good.
I'll tell you, I was a different player when I walked up there. I said, okay, this is not my normal at bat. This is Mariano. I know what he's going to do to me. And I just have to take my base hit to right field and just move on to fight another day. Don't think about hitting a double in the gap. Don't even think about taking him deep. That cutter is too heavy. Take your single to right field and move on to fight another day. That's all a part of, though, just, you know, experiences, knowing your limitations and knowing certain guys. If you brought in that sign widener for me, you know, it started with the Eckersley, but it moved on to other Sidewinder coming in the game. I don't care if I'm having a big week. I got four home runs this week. That yep. Sidewinder comes in. I am not taking the sinker deep. It's not conducive to my swing. I have to take my base hit through the middle of the field, move on to fight another day. And I think that's what you have to do as a pro hitter is know yourself, most importantly, and know your limitations with certain pitchers. Certain pitchers, okay, I got to do this. And the majority of the pitchers, yeah, I have my normal approach. But with this guy, I've got to take what he gives me. And I can't get to what's the word I'm looking for?
Like to be like vulnerable.
Put I can't get too aggressive and get too greedy about what I'm looking for. I'm going to take my base hit and just move the hell
keep
on.
Keep it moving.
It doesn't work. And if I try to think, oh, yeah, well, it's heavy, but I'm going to show him I can do it. Well, yeah. I'm out every time.
You know, it's
so
funny
that was
too.
The difference.
You know, it's funny too. Like they talk about, and I didn't know that Maddux actually had 95 in the tank. I didn't know that. That's
anytime he wanted. Now that's in the mid 90s.
Yeah, no,
he
I got
wanted
you.
It. He had it. Yeah,
I got. Okay, so to me, like, there's also the stories, and I believe it, of whether it's an Ichiro or a Wade Boggs. Like those guys could have sold out, and you know, probably maybe not Rod Crew because Rod had that very flat, you know, kind of flick it. Swing there, but I'm sure Tony Gwynn could have hit a lot more home runs. A lot of those guys that would hit 330, 340, 350 and only 8, 9, 10, 12 home runs, whatever it might be. I've heard stories about during BP, they would just put on a show. They'd go top tank, but they wouldn't sacrifice the allure of the power and have the batting average drop 30, 40 points. So it was a real conscious decision, and it seems like the way you explained Maddux, he made a similar decision, which I find really interesting for me. I've never heard that about Greg.
Well, I've heard, you know, I played with Ichiro. If you want to go to a home run derby, Ichiro would win every time. He hits every single ball in batting practice. Once he gets to a certain round, it's part of his routine. Uh-huh. He hits every single ball in the seats. And it's like a robot. Jesus. It's
wham. Other way it's or all
no. Or just a pull. Just a
I
pull.
Thought so. Okay.
It's wham. It's wham. And they're wow. back there too. Second deck.
Yeah.
Not just get scraping over the fence.
Uh-huh.
Wade Boggs, 1 year he hit 20 home runs.
I know that he did. No, he had 20. I think he had more than 20. That was 86.
Yeah.
That he had being a lot of home said, runs.
Yeah. I don't buy it.
Really?
Ichiro couldn't say, oh, I'm gonna try to hit home runs and be a 30 guy. I don't buy it.
That's interesting.
BP is one thing. BP yeah. is one thing. I've seen a lot of big time power BP guys. Remember back in the day, a teammate of mine, one of my favorite teammates, he's Lenny Harris. He's
oh, got yeah.
All time pinch hit record.
Yeah. I remember Lenny. Sure.
Lenny Harris could back leg you in BP.
Yeah.
And I mean, hit bombs.
Okay.
And I'd look at Lenny. I go, Lenny, I didn't know you had that much power. I guess that's BP power. And it was. Yeah. Some guys yeah. are BP power. And I think. Love Ichiro to death. He did unbelievable things.
Yeah, I get it.
He couldn't be a home run hitter if he wanted to. Because
all
I'll
right,
tell you
maybe,
what.
Hey,
I'll tell you
corrected.
What. Yeah. There is not a man on earth that if they could, let's say you're 340 every year, you're Boggs, mm-hmm. one of the great pure hitters of our time.
Ever.
If you could just throw, okay, 325, but I'll hit 30.
Yeah.
That's going to pay way more. If Ichiro could say, all right, instead of
that's
hitting 350 this year, I'm going to hit 320, but I'm going to hit 30. Yeah. I'm going to steal 40. That's going to double your pay.
Yeah.
You're doing it all day long because you're stealing.
True.
So don't.
All right.
I love the illusion.
Yeah.
Of, oh, he could do whatever he wants. I don't buy it. There's BP home runs and
okay.
then there's real home runs.
I stand corrected. That's why the guys like Mattingly and Brett. Miggy, Cabrera, Manny, you know, those guys hitting 320, 330, 340, banging. And now Donnie was not quite the pure power guy that some of the other was. He was more like Brett. But there's, you know, somebody like Miggy to hit 340 and hit 40 something home runs. It's just
Miggy,
insane.
Pujols' first 10 years.
Pujols.
Miguel Cabrera. People forget about these guys. Frank Thomas. Frank Thomas. Juan Gonzalez. Check on. Flip Juan Gonzalez's bubblegum card over one day if you want to be impressed. People don't even remember. I remember.
Yeah.
The best guy that's talked about the least I ever played against was Albert Bell. This guy's unbelievable.
I
for
know.
10 years in Cleveland,
I know.
There wasn't a more feared hitter in all of baseball.
He was terrifying.
There, oh, Unbelievable. And then check the number. I mean, it's like bad year. I know. When you drive in 127.
Sometimes
it was a terrible year for me. He was unbelievable. That was a bad year.
Wow. You know what I look at? Some of these guys too, Brett. So imagine now he played at LSU. Will Clark played at Mississippi State. Like some of these dudes with metal. Yeah, oh yeah. Will Vaughn played at Seton Hall with the Black Magic. Like some of these guys with a metal bat. Oh my God. What?
Yeah.
Come on.
But, you know, that's when you're a kid too. And it's,
I know.
We come up with the metal and it's just a different world now. You know, guys are, my dad wouldn't let me use a wood bat. He wouldn't let me ever even take one out. I remember in college, they bring the wood bats out and they're like, hey, let's hit with wood. My dad said, don't you dare.
Why?
He said, because you take your Green Easton, you go rake and let the scouts guess.
Ah.
Because what is the scout going to write down? It's easy, right? I'm a scout. I want to have a good take here. I have one bad session with a wood bat. Can't hit with wood. Mm-hmm. Why am I going to let him do that?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Give me the bazooka bat and let him guess.
Yeah.
And maybe down the road you find out, you know, I kid.
Yeah, but then you made a few bucks and it's too late. It's funny because so my son's got he's 11, so he's still young. He's got a 30-20 gamer, right? Drop 10, 30-20. He's got a wooden bat that I just do T-work and soft toss with him in. And it's so the gamer is 30-20. The wood is 32-27.5. And it's not, there's no speed on the soft toss. It's just, loading and really, getting used to the kind of, it almost seems like, should he not even do that? Like, I think that you're building up the forearms a little bit. No?
No, but for me, I never touched a wood bat. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Under the Raptors at Anaheim Stadium or the Vet. Yeah. I had a sawn off wood bat I was hitting with all the time. But as far as competitive baseball, I never broke it out.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, when I got drafted my junior year and I went to Peninsula, Virginia for A ball and I grabbed the lightest bat in the rack, wood was not a problem for me. You learn and it's fine. It's nothing that you need to. Now, there are some guys to this day, Trevor Hoffman, who became a pitcher, he says, because of it.
Uh-huh.
Trevor got drafted as a shortstop.
Yeah, I knew that.
U of A. And I'd say to Trev all the time, I said, what happened, man? You just had to become a Hall of Famer closer. And he said, Booney, I couldn't hit with wood. Mm. And I just looked at him. Trevor's a big, kind of stout, strong dude.
Yeah.
I thought, how does that in your vocabulary? I couldn't hit with wood. Well, maybe he wasn't hitting good. So then he just said, it's got to be the wood bat.
Yeah.
So we all have our things. But I think today's day and age, it's a different time. You really, as you go up the ranks and you become somebody that scouts are looking at, colleges are looking at, it's kind of a prerequisite. Like, no, we see you with a wood bat. Mm-hmm. And it's the sign of the times. In our time, in my time, that wasn't a normal thing. So why am I going to give them that? I'm not going to give them that.
I got it. Wow.
And that was my dad's philosophy.
Wow.
And couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that's funny.
I went to because dad was still playing until we missed playing with each other by 1 year. So dad's still playing through my college career. He's still in the big leagues.
Wow.
So I went off to
with the Angels. Yeah. Was he with the Angels at this point?
88, 89, he was with the Royals. But the Angels, the good part of the 80s.
Yeah.
So I remember in high school, because dad was never around. He's on the road trip. And I got, all these scouts are starting, when I'm in high school, they want me to come to these scouting camps. And I'm thinking as a kid, they want me there to, check me out. So I remember I went to this, it wasn't a tryout, but it was they're going to time you. They're going to measure your arm strength.
Yep.
So I thought this will be a good thing. I'll tell you, my dad got home, found out I went. He said, don't you ever go to one of those. You run around, you hit a double, go home to first, let him calculate that. Don't go to a camp, have a bad day, run a bad 60 and have somebody write down a negative thing about you. All your credentials come from how you play the game. And that was his. And the more I thought about it, when I took a step back and I go, that's actually brilliant. That's actually smart.
And I agree.
But when you're a kid, you just want to be invited, Blake.
For sure. I get it. And listen, I get it. I didn't get many invites. When I got one, I went. No matter what my dad said, I was coming.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.